Warning. This episode contains some strong language. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, and welcome to Tales from the Trunk, reading the stories that did make it. I'm Hillary B. Bisniaks. Listeners, I am super pleased to welcome back to the show, honestly, just one of my all-time favorite people in the whole world, Victor Menebo. Victor, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh my god, thank you so much for those kind words. I am so happy to be back on the pod. It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
I've been listening to the episodes. I'm like, you know what? Hillary and I should hang out again. And I'm glad we're
should.
Getting to do this now.
Yeah. When I saw that Escape Velocity was coming out this very month that we are that you are hearing this, dear listeners, because time is fake and podcast time especially so. I was like, yeah, I definitely need to have him back.
Yeah, it's a bad time for me to return.
Yeah. I don't remember if I was doing the book tours thing yet when The Sleepless came out. I honestly don't remember much of anything, but I feel like I should have had you on for The Sleepless. So I'm making up for it now.
Right. Well, you know, like I said, it's like, what is time, right? But the last time that I was on, it was before I was published. I did read one of my trunked stories. I don't think you were doing the book tour series of episodes yet. So we didn't get to do Sleepless, but we're making up for it now.
Yeah. And we will talk a little bit about The Sleepless at the end in case our listeners are unaware. I think back often on the story that you did read on that episode. It was Cask of Amontillado.
Yeah. In the
that
near
was
future.
A, I really liked that one.
I really like that one too. I'm bummed that it's in the trunk. I was thinking about it recently because of that Netflix show.
Oh, yeah.
That was just like a mishmash of like all the Poe references. And I was like, oh, maybe I should put that story back out there. But I'm like, also not. It's in the trunk. There's a reason it's in the trunk. It's a it's a kind of like part of the old, you know, Victor the writer when he was a baby writer. I'll revisit that. Maybe I'll do a retelling of one of my favorite Poe classics, but can't do it now because it's too hot and everybody's doing it.
Yeah. Give it, I mean, that's the thing about publishing. It's a long game. Give it 10 years, people will have forgotten. And then when you hit them with it, they won't see what's coming.
Yeah, I know. It's like cicadas, you know? It's like they come in a cycle that is measured in decades. That interest in certain things. So yeah, maybe in the future. I love, obviously, Edgar Allan Poe. So who knows?
We, however, are here, as I mentioned very briefly several minutes ago, to talk about Escape Velocity. Before we get into a reading, is there anything our listeners should know about this fine piece of literature?
Fine piece of literature. Thank you. So this book is my sophomore novel. It's the second one that I have written, and it's also the second one that I've been lucky to get picked up and get published.
Escape Velocity
takes place in... It's very exciting. It's very exciting when I think about it that way. It's like, okay, it's the second one I wrote, and then it's the second one that's coming out. like I said, I've been very fortunate in this journey that I've had so far. And it was interesting because I started writing this 2019 with no expectation of you know, getting published. I was, again, this is like a few years back, and I didn't know what to do with, like, with the manuscripts that I wrote. So I was just having fun. So Escape Velocity was me really having fun. Sleepless was me trying to see if I could do it. And then when I was able to do it, I was like, okay, let's try to have a little bit more fun. So to, in my mind at least, Escape Velocity is a little more fun. I know I keep saying that word, but I think readers will understand if they read the books side by side. There's a lot of dark themes, obviously, very important, weighty issues that I talk about in both books. But I would say that Escape Velocity is more thrilling. It's more, to me, a popcorn movie, and I say that with all the love in the world.
Oh, know? Hell yeah, absolutely. I love a popcorn.
The book is set, right, and you know, it's like one of those things that you get something entertaining, but also hopefully, I hope the readers would also find that it's thought provoking, and it starts like conversations about, like I said, the heavier themes that I want to talk about.
Absolutely. All right, well, I am ready to get into this reading when you are.
Yeah, okay, so I'm just going to start from the very beginning, from the opening chapter.
Yes.
Because I'm starting from the beginning, the audience, our listeners, don't need any further background. So here we go. Chapter 1, Schrodinger's Spaceman. The stars blurred into curved lines of silver, crisscrossing the spaceman's field of vision as he tumbled and spun. He flailed his arms and legs, his grasp searching for something, anything to arrest his motion. "Which way is up?" Henry Gallagher asked himself. There was no up in space, but when one is in a free fall, rationality takes a dive as well. He awoke in that state, shaken by a floating piece of debris, a rock, or possibly a torn-off hunk of satellite. The loud thud to the back of his helmet roused him from unconsciousness, just as much as the spinning that immediately followed. Soon enough, his movement had slowed to what felt like stillness, his body having found its own orbit. "Comms," Henry called out weakly. The inner screen of his helmet came to life with icons and graphs. "Communication system, out of range." "Find Altair," he then stated. Even as his screen zoomed in on the station, he could barely see it. Space habitat Altair floated far beyond him, at the edge of the Earth's horizon where much of Asia slowly disappeared from view. The screen flashed a directional arrow and a number too big for him to comprehend. "Holy fuck," Henry muttered under his breath. "How did I get here?" He asked both himself and his suit, but got no response. Apparently, the smart suits weren't as smart as he'd been promised. All it told him was that it was Saturday, October 10, 2089, 5:53 p.m. station time. He pulled up his vitals, which showed his oxygen saturation, his pulse and breathing rate, his blood pressure. All stable, all things considered. Most importantly, his tank had enough O2 for another 3 hours and change. He knew that Altair orbited the globe about 18 times in the span of a day, and he assured himself that it didn't matter that he got ejected with no comms and no means to maneuver. The station would circle back around to where he was well before he ran out of air. He checked that his signal beacon was still transmitting, then pulled up his coordinates to estimate when this flyby would occur. The display told him that he was about 1,400 kilometers above sea level, on an orbit well below the Altair's. The station could circuit back right above his head, and he would still be too far to establish comm range. Blind panic began to set in, but all was not lost. Henry reached for the control arms of his jetpack. All he needed to do was propel himself toward the Altair's orbit, close enough for its scanners to pick up his signal beacon. Cheered by the prospect of rescue, he held on and pressed the buttons on his jetpack, only to be deflated by the display on his screen. Propellant 0%. Fuck! Henry screamed. As he did, a crick in his jaw radiated pain. Instinctively, he raised a hand to feel his head, the back of his skull. He'd been knocked around, and not by the slight piece of space junk that shook him awake. He'd sustained some sort of blunt force injury, and if he weren't marooned in space, Henry might be more afraid. As it was, the only emotion he could muster was confusion. He checked his reflection in the glass and saw a reddish bruise on his left jaw. He saw, too, that instead of the standard base layer for an EVA suit, he wore a spread-collar button-down shirt and a black bow tie. Even his spacesuit was wrong. He was wearing a silver-gray EVA suit with the Altair logo, one of the station's loaners. Why would he have this on? He had a custom designer suit, bright red with racing stripes running down the sides. He attributed the memory loss to his head injury, but at least he remembered his civilian aerospace training and all the math that it required. Having a computer helped too. Judging by a straight line distance from the Altair and his distance from the station's orbit above him, he estimated that he'd been off the station for about an hour. The Altair's orbital speed was constant, and so was his. He may have gotten knocked around by debris, but the impact wasn't too fast or too forceful to have changed his position by much. Looking back now, Henry thanked that piece of junk for having just the right size and velocity to wake him up without throwing him farther off course. His angle was the bigger conundrum. To end up in an orbit well below the Altair, he must have left the station with a trajectory that diverged from the station's. To be that far away and so off course would have required sustained thrust, and someone intending to steer him away from the Altair's orbit. That explained the empty jetpack. He was shunted off the station. He had to have been. And let's stop there.
Oh my goodness. It's giving me flashbacks to, what was that movie? Gravity.
It's a big inspiration for this scene in particular.
In a way that's, like, bringing back how stressful I found that film, but in a way where, like, you know, I know that this is the first chapter of the book, and I'm pretty sure that you're not going to bait and switch us and just, you know, the rest of the book is from somebody else's perspective. But, like,
So, I was very heavily inspired by Gravity, at least for that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I had the same tension that you felt. Like, that I think every viewer of that film felt. Like, what is going to happen to Sandy Bullock floating in space? Like, how is this going to happen? And you know, like, I write mysteries. I do consider my sci-fi books to be mysteries and thrillers as well. And I do a fair play kind of mystery where everything is as it seems. I don't do the whole bait and switch. So we do see a little bit of the progression of how Henry Gallagher gets to that point, and also what happens from this point forward.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm looking forward to that. So, you know, I love asking this question, in part because I think it's really just a fun question, and in part because a little part of me likes to watch my guests squirm just a little bit, you know? Just like a little bit. Without,
okay, a little bit.
Without giving too much away, because this is obviously a thriller. Do you have a favorite part of this book that you're just so excited for our listeners to get to when they read it?
Oh, so many. Okay. Because I've just read the first chapter, I'm very excited for the readers to find out how Henry got to where he is at the beginning of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, like, every time I ask a friend or a beta reader to read the book, I'm always, one of the first things I ask is like, okay, what did you think about how it happened? So I think the revelation of the sequence of events is something that I'm excited for readers to get to. And aside from that, there are also other things going on because we haven't really talked about the premise of the book. It takes place on this space habitat, right? But it is a luxury hotel, basically, where a high school reunion is taking place. And we have Henry Gallagher as one of the main characters. And we have other characters, his friends from high school, and how they interact then impacts how they obviously interact at this reunion. And so there are other things that happen to the other characters. They're also point of view characters that I'm very excited for the readers to get to.
So
because everybody, this is just what I do to my characters. Everybody is going to be tortured physically, emotionally, mentally to some extent, sometimes too much. There are bits that I'm very excited about. And I guess, like, oh my god, this is so long because, like, I'm very excited about every piece of this book. Very, very excited. And you know, that just, you might think that I'm biased, but also I feel like, oh, this is so much fun because that's how I felt when I was writing it. I felt like, oh, this bit was really fun to write, and I bet it's going to be really fun to read. And thankfully, the folks who have read it have given me the feedback that they did enjoy specifically the bits that I found the most enjoyable. But going back to what I was going to say, I am very excited for the readers also to get to a point in the story, and this is not too spoilery. This happens, like, fairly early on, where kind of the rules shift a little bit because the point of view changes, and we get to see the point of view of not just these rich people attending a reunion in outer space, but we get the point of view of the staff and how these characters also have their own issues and their own plans and their own baggage and trauma, and how that interacts with the other characters that we first meet. I always like that part in a book where the writer lulls you into this sense of like, okay, I think I know what the rules are in this book, and then you see, oh, okay, the world expands a little bit, and I have to, as a reader, kind of recalibrate what my conception is of how this book is going to go. I think that's always enjoyable, and I can't wait for the readers to get to that point as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, obviously, I wrote these questions. I know they dovetail nicely. I think, you know, talking about the places where you were really excited when you were writing it for people to read, and because, of course, this is Tales from the Trunk, are there any parts of this book that just didn't make it in that, you know, for whatever extremely valid publishing reason, are not in this finished copy, but that you really want want listeners to know about, want your readers to know about, as like, you know, this is a thing that could have happened but got cut, or, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I was mentioning earlier, when I wrote this, when I drafted this, I wanted to have as much fun as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of just it. Like, oh, this is going to be cool. This is going to be fun. So there are a lot of bits that through the revision process, through the editing process, had to be taken out. And not for publishing reasons, but for real craft reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we put something in a story or a book, we want everything to have as much purpose and meaning as possible.
Of course, yeah.
Narratively, it has to have purpose. It has to enhance the characterization, deepen the world somewhat. And as much as I had fun putting in all these extra details for world building or extra scenes, I knew that I had to take them out. I kind of regret having to pull back a little bit, but they mm-hmm. do make sense, and they do make for a stronger book, especially with thrillers.
I think
when people read a thriller, they have a certain expectation on the pace of how things unfold, and so I had to pare it down. If somebody has read The Sleepless and compares it to Escape Velocity, they'll see, oh, this book is a lot shorter, tighter, and that was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I had to pull back on was the nerdery, the hard science fiction stuff,
mm-hmm.
because this is happening in space. Obviously, we have this astronaut who is marooned in space, and it was very important to me to get the science right, to get the measurements right, to get the mechanics, the orbital mechanics, as plausible as possible. Excuse me. And so doing that required me to kind of explain things. And because this is the drafting process, I was explaining it as much to myself as to the reader. And it's like, okay, well, we don't need all of this science. We have to stick with the science as it's necessary for the story to advance and for the reader to be along for the ride without feeling lost or as confused and lost as Henry is. There are a lot of, like, action scenes in space that I had to kind of orchestrate or like choreograph
mm-hmm.
with numbers and science that didn't make it to the final cut, and I think it's it made for a stronger book. I'm just bummed that like I learned all of that orbital mechanics and it didn't make it to the final.
Yeah,
but that's okay. I learned things.
Yeah.
So that's one big thing. The other big thing that got cut out is a lot of sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, this is a book of pure id when it was being drafted, so there were a lot of sex scenes. There mm-hmm. is an orgy scene in the book. And this orgy scene serves the purpose of bringing together certain characters and showing their personalities, showing their opposing agendas, showing the tensions between them in mm-hmm. a very, you know, basic way, right? And
right.
it's in an orgy setting, and this is a party with rich people. So this kind of harkens back to olden times when those things happened in the aristocracy. I mean, that still happens now. Let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the vibe that I was going for. And I had like four chapters in this orgy, like from different points of view, and it was fun to write. And for me personally, it was fun
mm-hmm.
to read. For some of my betas, it was also very enjoyable. But again, you have different considerations as a writer when you're going into the revision phase and the editing phase, where you're
mm-hmm.
thinking more about not just the fun part of it, but also narratively, does this make sense? how is the reader feeling as they go along through this orgy? I mean, some readers might want 4 chapters of an orgy. And most readers probably will want that a little more compressed. Especially, again, given the expectations of the book and the expectations that I myself have set up prior to that scene. So I'm a little bummed that some of those things needed to be cut out. But at the same time, it's like that it made for a stronger book, for sure.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, listeners, I don't know about you. I was already very excited for this book going into this interview. I am even more excited for it now.
Awesome. I'm glad.
Yeah. As promised earlier, can you give us just a very short pitch about The Sleepless, your debut novel?
Sure. So, for those who have missed out on me pitching The Sleepless elsewhere... The Sleepless, my debut novel, came out in August 2022 from Erewhon Books. I am very proud of this debut novel, and I'm very grateful for the team at Erewhon for making my dreams come true and letting me tell this story. It's a story about a world where a certain segment of the population does not need sleep, does not require sleep, and does not have the ability to sleep, and they're the sleepless. Mm-hmm. And this kind of condition came about as a result of a global pandemic, and it has basically upended the lives of individuals as well as the way the world does things, because sleep is essential to every human being, but also sleep kind of the lack of the need for sleep kind of impacts a person's ability to be productive in society, or to spend time with their family, or to spend time doing what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't need the 8 hours, 7 hours, or in my case, the 5 or 6 hours that I get to sleep, that's 5 or 6 or 8 hours that you can do, that you can use doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I explored those questions in the context of one of the sleepless. He is an investigative journalist who has to investigate the sudden death of his boss and mentor. And as he does so, he uncovers some conspiracies, some wide-ranging conspiracies that impact both the sleepless and the world at large.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you've slept on this book, I encourage you not to.
Awesome. Yes, do not sleep on this book. It will keep you up all night.
Yeah. It is really just a great... It is a great book, and it is a great first novel.
Thank you so much.
I'm very
really appreciate that.
Excited for... I know in the music world, sometimes people talk about like, oh, you know, the sophomore slump or whatever, but like, I don't really believe it. I think it's mostly just like critics need to sell criticism a lot of the time.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's two parts of it too. It's like, one half of it is it's such an easy thing, like you said, for critics and reviewers to just point to and say, well, this new work, this second work, has some flaws. It's not perfect. Therefore, it is this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it kind of, from the point of view of the creative, it also feels like, oh, now there's this pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe the first one, you know, did very well. I my book was not a runaway hit by any means, but I'm very happy with the reception it's gotten, the way that readers have connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always that doubt, and there still is even now, that, oh, maybe this book isn't going to be as, you know, well-liked, well-received by the readers. And it's a constant struggle to not let those thoughts affect the way, the joy that I have in having this book out, and also the way that I write my future projects, because all of that is just like outside, right? That's all like how it's received by the world, and that's not something a writer or a musician or any creative person can really control.
Yeah. And it's also something that, like, the comparison that I always make in my head is Arcade Fire. You know, Funeral comes out, amazing, incredible record, and then Neon Bible comes out, and people are like, what? This isn't Funeral? But, like, if you look, you know, it's Funeral came out 20 years ago this year, which seems absolutely fake.
Yeah.
But, like, if you look back, like, Neon Bible still fucking rips. Like, yeah, it wasn't Funeral,
sure,
but it didn't have to be Funeral. Like, so that's
and,
just
you
the
know,
thing that's always, like...
As a fan, you kind of want some sort of progression and variation, I would hope, right? From someone you like, from a band you like, from a writer, from anyone. I'd like to think that, at least with this book, I kept saying I had more fun. I let my id go wild a little bit more. And that's going to make it a different kind of book. And I'm happy with how it's turned out. I just hope that readers are happy with how it's turned out. But it's not going to be the same. And it shouldn't be the same. Ideally, in a you know, perfect world, like, every work is going to stand on its own and have its own merits and have its own flaws. And that's great, because it's all about the body of work. At least that's how I want to think about my writing life. Like, it's all about how this all comes together.
Yeah. So before we go, possibly the hardest question that I ask everybody, is there anything in the wider media landscape that you've been enjoying that you really want our listeners to know about?
Oh, wow. Okay. Where to begin? I love this. And I love this question. Every episode that I listen to where you have a guest on, this is like really where I listen to closely, because I get so many ideas. And I'm introduced to a lot of things. I'm introduced to a lot of things that are also outside of my kind of media bubble, right? So the one thing that I'm obsessed with right now is number one, Cowboy Carter by Beyonce.
Oh, hell yeah.
Amazing, amazing album. I would, hot take, I would say that this is better than Renaissance. I know the Beehive is going to come for me, but I think this is a stronger album. And I'm obsessed with it. I've just been listening to it nonstop. With TV, I am obsessed with Shogun, the show on Netflix, based on the novel by James Clavell. And it is, when people say that it has Game of Thrones vibes, that feels like almost an insult. I love Game of Thrones, but it is such a diluted comparison to what Shogun is and what Shogun is trying to do, and how well written and well structured and well acted that show is. It's a show that I feel like knows what it is from the get-go, which is rare for a lot of types of media, where, especially with TV shows, where they kind of have to feel out what they're trying to do, what the vibe is. Shogun comes out of the gate knowing, like, this is what we're going to do. This show is going to be, you know, 60% subtitles, and we don't care. I love that. This is going to show, you know, the horrors of colonialism from the get-go. I love that. The white dude is not going to be the center of this story. I love that. And every episode, it just escalates. And it's so mind-blowingly impressive to me.
That's awesome.
And as for books, one of the things that I read recently that I'm fairly obsessed with is Our Share of Nights by Mariana Enriquez.
Ooh.
This is an Argentinian horror novel in translation, and it is about... Okay, it's a 600-plus page novel that is hard to distill because it deals with so many things. It deals with... It starts out with the story of a father and son on a journey, and on a journey of this boy, the son, discovering things about his family and the reader discovering things as well. And it deals with occultism and generational trauma, and there are very, very horrific images that are still seared into my brain from this book. The story takes place, it kind of has an epic scope because it takes place over, I want to say, 2 decades, and follows these characters around during a tumultuous time in Argentina's history, during the dictatorship and the fall of the dictatorship. And so there's the layer of a family saga and also a horror story, or the horrors of, you know, your family being horrible, the country being horrible, rich people being horrible, and, you know, calling dark forces to do their bidding. And if this sounds like...
That sounds incredible.
Incredible, but also too much. It is too much. It's always at like 100, and it doesn't quit, and I love that about it. And it's the kind of book where I also had to be like, whoa, I can't move on after that page, after that scene. I need to put this down and step away and like do my meditations because like I am too tense. So yeah, I love it. I was recently at a conference with writers. I was at the international conference on the Fantastic in the Arts, and a bunch of us writers just talked about this novel for like maybe a solid 2 hours. A lot of people love this book for very good reason, and that's Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez.
Fantastic. Listeners, as always, links to all the things will be in the show notes. Victor, it's been such a blast having you on. Before we get going, where can our listeners find you elsewhere?
So everyone can find me at Victor Maniba. That's just my first name and my last name. That is my handle on all social media sites. I am on Twitter, the place I refuse to call X.
Yep.
I am on Instagram. I am on TikTok. I am on Facebook. And I am on Substack, but I'm not posting because Substack is kind of eh.
Yep.
So if you want to read my past blog posts, prior musings on art and writing, they're still all there. That's where I am. And my website is victormanibo.com.
Fantastic. Well, Victor, it has been such a pleasure having you back on the show. I cannot wait for whatever is next from you, and I cannot wait to bring you back on to have yet more amazing conversation.
Oh my god, this was so much fun. I can't wait to be back. We're gonna jam again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Listeners, stick around in 2 weeks when my guest will be Meg Ellison, which, like...
Ooh!
I know, right?
I love Meg.
I reached out to her and I was like, hey, do you maybe want to be on my podcast? And she was like, hell yeah, I do.
Awesome. Meg is great. I love reading her and hanging out with her. She's such a delight.
Yeah, she's incredible. Tales from the Trunk is mixed and produced in beautiful Oakland, California. Our theme music is Paper Wings by Lillian Boyd. You can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/trunkcast. All patrons of the show now get a sticker and logo button, along with show outtakes and other content that can't be found anywhere else. You can find the show on Blue Sky at Trunkcast, and I post at HBBisniecks. If you like the show, consider taking a moment to rate and review us on your preferred podcast platform. And remember, don't self-reject.